ask a question. Why is it that there is a tendency of the interactions between layperson and the sangha to be monologue? And that the normally when you hear a Dharma talks or whatever, you started the talk, most people won't ask any question. Is it because of the cultural influence, or is it because that we're scared to what you call to argue with the teacher or not agree with the teacher? Because I noticed in most of these talks it's naturally a monologue kind of situation. Even though we are asked to be investigative, we are asked to ask questions and to investigate.
Okay, well, awesome question. Awesome question. How long have you got to hear the answer? Because maybe people got to go, but if you want to have a coffee or something, there's a good answer to this. There's a great answer to this. So here's how I'd answer. So I'm in a room full of Chinese Malaysians, and you likely had, Chinese cultural influence growing up. Part of that heritage, you inherited some thinking from Confucius, where a very strong value is loyalty, okay? Like, Confucius pretty much jumps up and down waving his arms about loyalty, okay? That's his ultimate teaching. And it's, you don't really get to push back. Whoever's the boss or whoever's the leader or whoever's the king or whatever, it's risky to push back against him because he might really make you regret that. He's very powerful and he probably doesn't like it whenever anybody embarrasses him,
Can I interject?
Okay.
But I noticed that when we interact with foreign monks, we are more vocal. But when we interact with from Sri Lanka, from Burma, we tend to be more compliant. But when we meet you, we talk more. We ask more. And they're laughing. But if it's a Sri Lankan monk,
I bet
none of them will be laughing. You'll be very serious.
Well, there's an explanation, brother. Okay, so in ancient China or modern China or all of Southeast Asia, okay, where your staple food is rice, you got rice patties. When it comes time to irrigate the rice patties, all the farmers must cooperate with each other to open the gates and let the irrigation water onto the patties, and then you got to drain it back off. And you must cooperate with your neighbors. If some neighbor of yours hates you, he might not decide to cooperate with you. Okay, you must get his cooperation to do this irrigating. So it forces your culture. It's like, be careful to not offend anyone.
Be safe.
Be safe. Don't take a risk. Don't affront anyone. Don't get anybody angry. Let's use indirect methods to really, handle everything. Okay, that's why the culture is way more like an indirect. You don't like confrontation. Yeah, it totally has to do with the rice patties, okay? Now, in Western culture, where I'm from, this came from the Greeks. So this is the kind of opposite thing, where the way that the wheat farmers did their farms is you don't need the cooperation of your neighbor when you grow your wheat. There is no irrigation channels to speak of. You can afford to argue with your neighbor. Okay? You can afford to, disagree with your neighbor. Maybe your neighbor even hates you. But you still grow your wheat without his cooperation. You see? So Western culture can get away with more arguing. Western culture can get away with more confrontation. Yeah. And that comes from the whole wheat thing, the whole farming style. I know, it sounds crazy. But that's where Socrates comes from, Plato comes from. They're from Greek culture, so they're kind of the original thought leaders, you might say. Okay? You might say they're like the Confucius type thinkers of the Western world, ancient Western world. Okay? And so you may have heard of the Socratic method. Okay? Comes from Socrates. So Socrates, he would famously, people hated his guts. A lot of people hated Socrates. He would go to the marketplace, and he loved to talk, and he would get in conversations, and, you know, let's say I went to your market here, and there's like a Hindu guy, and I'm like, oh, so you look like you're Indian. Yeah, I'm Indian. Are you Hindu? Yeah, I'm Hindu. Do you believe in, like, Ganesh? Yeah. Ganesh has got an elephant head. Is that right? Yeah. But a human body? Yeah. What's up with that, you know? Why would I believe in a god with an elephant head and a human body? Can you explain to me how that makes any sense? You know what I mean? So then they'd be like, oh, well, there was this ancient story where, you know, the head was taken off this elephant and stuck on the baby. And, well, how do I know that that's true? Like, that sounds like made up story, though. Like, how, you know, it sounds pretty stupid to me. Like, you never see that. You never see, like a dog head on a human body or something in it. No, it's just crazy talk. Like, so Socrates would, like, challenge people. He'd get in their face and he'd be like, so you believe this? How does that make any sense? He would confront people, and people get like angry and stuff. Like, how dare you insult Ganesh? You know, that's my religion. That's like, you know. So Socrates, he would get in people's face, and so this is where the whole thing came from. Where like these. Beliefs, which are oftentimes just superstition at the end of the day, okay? Once science proves something for sure, oh, it turns out that's just superstition after all. It was just a superstition that the sun went around the earth. No, actually, the earth goes around the sun. Okay, now we know it's a superstition. Okay, so, you see? So he was that first guy to really be willing to push and be like, can you defend these views? If they made sense, you could defend them. Okay? If you can't defend your views, they must be pretty crappy views. You know? Yeah. So that's where that comes from. Yeah.